Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My guest today is a boxer. By 17, he was an Olympic silver medalist. By his mid-20s, he was a world champion, fighting in Vegas and earning millions. But this isn't Hollywood, and he isn't Rocky. He said, "One day I looked at my bank account, and it was all gone." Additionally, his private life became public, as marital conflicts and family feuds played out on social media and in the press. My guest today is Amir Khan. Amir, welcome to Unfiltered.
Thank you for having me.
How's tricks, mate?
It's going really well, yeah, good. We've had a really busy day today, just doing media work and stuff, and this is one of the last ones, I hope.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, because we've saved the best to the last.
You reckon?
Yeah.
If you could call me a Bruce Buffer, and you're saying that, it's pretty high praise, isn't it? You've heard a lot of those intros as well, as I said.
Yeah, I've had a lot of intros, but that was a good one.
You would have. Cheers, boss.
And if we ever needed someone...
I'll give you my number afterwards. We'll hook it up. And then you're back home to Dubai this weekend?
That's right, yeah. So I've got, Sunday night, I'll be taking a flight back to Dubai, seeing the kids and stuff. The wife is over there as well. So, it's just been a really busy couple of days here. And then I thought that I can go and just relax and do nothing then.
Mm-hmm. What's it like being back in Britain? You enjoy being back?
Yeah, I love it. The weather's amazing. I mean, the weather today is awesome. And it's just nice to meet everyone, and you see your fans, and you jump in the car, and the guy goes, "Oh, Amir Khan, the boxer." Mm-hmm. And that's like a take two to go, "You look like the boxer." And sometimes I get away with by saying, "It's not me." But then they go, "But you sound like him as well." I'm like, "Well, you're the second person that said that."
Do you ever get used to the fans and people coming up to you?
Yeah.
And you get used to it?
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah, I don't really mind. I mean, it's nice, really, and I really appreciate it and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, yeah, I don't mind it. And honestly, if I have to stand there for like an hour just taking pictures of people, I have to. I can't say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've always just took pictures and just gone with it, really.
I think, we'll cover this in the interview, right? You know, born and raised in Bolton.
Yeah.
And something that comes across very strongly in the book, which is the reason we're talking, is your love for your hometown. So,
yeah, definitely, man. Bolton.
Tell us about Bolton.
Bolton is a small town, and obviously, you know, I've been there. I started my boxing career off in Bolton as well. And I was at the age of 8 when I started in a small little gym. It was like a run-down gym in a place, Halliwell, in a certain area. And, you know, it just brings back great memories that at the age of 8, I would never have thought that I'd be in a position now where I'd be writing books, I'd be 2-time world champion, I'd be Olympic medalist, and it's just, Bolton's been good for me. And I think, also we have one of the best football teams in, one of the best football teams, Bolton Wanderers.
Yeah.
So listen, Bolton is a nice place. Have you ever been to Bolton?
Once.
Yeah, so it's a nice spot. It's quite chill, quite green.
Mm.
I still miss the places where I used to go for a run. And you know, I just drive around that area. I had some great times in Bolton, and that's where I built a wedding hall. So I've still got a connection with it, because mum and dad still live there as well. Mm-hmm. They've got the house there. I still have my house there as well, but I've got a wedding hall which I've now rented out. Mm-hmm. So And I'm doing a lot more properties over there, like building some units and stuff like that. So I'm keeping myself busy and I don't really want to move out of Bolton because it's been good to me. And it's like I want to give back to Bolton by quitting jobs and stuff like that.
Nice. Let's talk about your parents a little bit. You've got a strong connection to Pakistan. Both your parents' families emigrated from there. Tell us about your relationship.
Yeah, really, really good relationship we have. They're from Pakistan, near Rawalpindi. And yeah, you know, I love going to Pakistan with them. You get to meet all your cousins, aunties, uncles. I mean, I've got a massive family. Since I've got a little bit of a name in Pakistan, I think my family is probably extended by another bloody 1,000 probably.
People
like everywhere,
relationships with you.
People are like, oh yeah, I'm your uncle. I met that many uncles. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you always travel there a lot when you were young?
I did. When I was young, I used to go there a lot and I didn't have that many uncles then. But
more now.
More now. Maybe they were busy working then. But look, I love the country. It's always good to go back there and, you know, I still do a lot of charity over there as well. Mm-hmm. Building schools, orphanages, water wells. See, the small things like water well, we'll take it for granted over here. Water, we leave the tap on. But there, mate, some other people don't get clean water to drink. So I'm doing a lot of work with the Amir Khan Foundation over there as well. And I just love it there because they love seeing me when I go to Pakistan. I'm like a hero to them. So, like, yeah, man. You know, especially with all the bodyguards you have, you know, with the security, the police, the army and stuff. I like that. I mean, you were buzz off it as well. If you imagine being in a car behind and then having about 20 bodyguards in front of you with like machine guns and God knows why, like.
Pretty
man.
Big time.
I'm the man. Yeah. Prime Minister level, you know what I mean?
I think, am I right in saying your dad, the TV rights were free for your fights in Pakistan?
Yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah, go on.
So what we did was we wrote to them. Well, we wrote and spoke to them on the phone and said to them, look, my dad said, Pakistani boxer, British, lives here, but obviously he's representing England, but he's a Pakistani. And in a way also represents your country. So we want to give you the fights and we like to see him on Pakistan television. Let the Pakistanis see that he's making a name for Pakistan by being in England.
Mm-hmm.
They said, nah, we're not interested in boxing. We don't want it. And some of that said, cool, left it. Said boxing is not really a good sport. See, they see boxing as a poor man's sport.
Mm.
Yeah. So anyway, then the next time it came around, they said, fine, we'll take this fight. And it was against Marcos Maidana. It was a really entertaining fight as well. I did that. And no one, mind you, at this time, no one knew me in Pakistan. No one knew who Amir Khan is or anything. I went there, won the goal. Knocked him down in the first round, won the world title back. And everyone thought, wow, this is the main man now. Wow, we love Amir Khan. And they then respected me even more because they said to me that I was raising the flag for Pakistan, even though I'm British. And I was proud of my dual nationality, you know. So, I made a massive name over there. And it's been brilliant, honestly, since. It's been awesome. Like, I get really looked after and I get really a lot of respect from there. I've done a lot of few ads over there for commercials and it's crazy.
Well, yeah. What have you been selling?
So, I've been I did a drink company, like one of the energy drinks. I do one of them.
Prime, like Prime.
Like Prime, yeah. But, yeah, it was like Prime. And then I did another one on the aeroplane for a mobile company.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't really in an aeroplane. They had to make, like, they made one and it was even quite funny how they put it together. But on the video, it looks perfect.
Looks sick.
And then I did another drink company. So there you can work with about 2-3 different drinks. They don't really care.
With it, yeah.
It's like, no problem. So you could be advertising a drink company here and another one over there.
Two billboards opposite each other.
But look, it's all been fun. It's been brilliant. And I've had great times over there. And even though it's not for much money, but I did it because I thought, look, it's just good, great PR.
Mm.
It's good for like my family who are in Pakistan to see their
all those uncles, pointing at my nephew
on a big screen and say, oh, that's my nephew. That
nice. Another thing that comes across really strongly in the book,
is
your spirituality and your pride in your Muslim faith. Would you describe your household growing up as a religious one?
Religious in a sense where, we are Muslim. We eat halal food. We pray. We go to the mosque. We give to charity.
And so definitely. And also we have the respect for the religion. And so we follow the five pillars of Islam. I think some people can take it out of context. I mean, they can go very deep into Islam. You can't do this, you can't do that. But no, I mean, Islam is not a religion like that. It is a religion which is very easy to follow. And we just follow it, we respect each other, and we do our prayers, and that's what it is.
What role did it have shaping you in your early life, your faith?
Give me a lot of discipline. Mm. Yeah, give me a lot of discipline. And that helped with the boxing, going to the gym and staying focused and making do my diet and everything. And then, with praying and going to the mosque, that also helped, just keeping me focused and also giving me a lot of downtime, like keeping me relaxed as well. Mm. By praying, it gave me a lot of peace, believed in myself a little bit more, know that there's a God above you who is helping you. And obviously, that's why I'm in this position. So whenever I was going to war, I would pray to God that, please give me some strength. Give me strength. I want to win this fight. And, you know, God, you've got someone overlooking her on you. So, yeah.
That must be really useful as a fighter, particularly dealing with, I don't know if you call them negative emotions, but, you know, emotions like fear or anxiety before you're getting in the ring, to have something like that that's a bit meditative that allows you to kind of deal with those emotions, which would be really useful.
Think about it. You're going into war. You go into a fight, you've got one of the most dangerous guys in front of you, and you when you're in that ring, you're on your own, but you know that God's looking over you. Just that gives you that bit of energy, that gives you more, a little bit more help and support. And I have that on my side. And that's how I really believe that took me this far in my career.
Let's talk a little bit more then about how you got into boxing. Let's put it like this. If one of your sort of primary school teachers or one of your early sort of like people who works in a nursery or whatever was sat there now and I was interviewing them and I asked them to describe you when you were younger, what do you think they'd say about you?
I'd say they would say a very disciplined kid. Well, see, primary school, I was a bit naughty.
Oh, yeah?
Secondary school, I was really good. Like, I was like a total different child.
Because you got into boxing.
Yeah, and I think boxing gave me so much discipline and put me on the right path. Whereas when I was young, I was very naughty. I did silly things like go and eat the teacher's cake on the desk. Her lunch it was, and I'm out there, a cake. Can you believe that? Like, I'd be scared to do that now.
Yeah.
But I went and did that, and that's really crazy. Like, and I got in trouble for that. And then obviously, misbehaving and being a naughty child.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why my dad then put me into the gym.
Okay.
Because I used to always start fighting stuff because he thought, let me burn that energy. You know, as a father, you probably would think, putting him in a boxing gym, that's only going to make him worse. But guess what? He did the opposite to me, because me, looking at him from outsider, said, I don't know nothing about boxing. These kids are always fighting on the streets or in school. But I'm going to put him in a boxing gym. That'll make him even more dangerous. But guess what? He did the opposite to me. It made me work hard. Give me a lot of discipline to fight. See, one thing boxing teaches you is not to fight outside on the street. So whenever there would be any problems or any issues, I'd walk away from trouble. I don't want to fight.
It's interesting because you'd think, you know, as a kid in that situation, whether it's, I don't know, a bullying type situation or one of your mates gets in a fight or whatever, and you know how to fight, you'd think that as a child, you'd use that skill that you've learned. But you're saying that wasn't the case.
No, that wasn't the case. If a fight happened, make sure you try to, you know, solve the situation in a way where you just dissolve it and say, look, guys, it's cool. Mm-hmm. Let's walk away. Fine, you're stronger than me, you're better than me, or whatever you want to say. Just walk away, because sometimes things by beating someone up doesn't solve a situation. So I used to be like, I was the laid back one because I know that I'm a trained fighter and I can fight.
Mm.
So
I guess there's a bit of ego there, right, as well, because, you know, if you know how to fight, beating someone up who doesn't know how is kind of, you know, what have you proven?
Very unfair. You're not proving nothing. You know what I mean? So I used to just have that buzz of going to the gym and having a hard spar with another fighter who's really good or probably better than me. Mm-hmm. And I did really well against him because these guys are not really fighters. So there's no point beating a guy on this outside in this playground or on the street because you're not getting nothing.
Mm-hmm. So was your dad took you to a boxing gym for the first time, was it very much deliberate kind of, you know, Amir's a bit hyperactive, let's give him something to sort of put his energy out on. Is that kind of what the thinking
was?
Correct,
that's what the book's about. That book will tell you all about when I was young, what boxing did for me, how it took me off the streets, how it gave me discipline, how it gave me focus in life, and also then how I started to behave in school. So you got stories about me in school, how I started to change the way I was. And then you would get teachers calling my house. Normally the teacher would call my house and say, come in school and take him home or supervise him in school. But this time it was, oh, he's been such a good child. He's just got the best pupil in the class. I mean, I started getting awards, which was like from one extreme to another extreme. And like my mom would be like, what's happening here?
Nice, man. You've called in the book as well, you've called boxing, this is quite a blood sport, and said, the first time I made an opponent bleed, my coach told me, well done. I like that. You know, we mentioned it already, but getting in the ring with someone, knowing that's what you're going into, knowing that they want to hurt you, that it's a fight, you know, it sounds terrifying. It is terrifying.
It sounds very scary. And it's, some of that's not normal. You're going into the ring to punch someone in the face and hurt them.
Mm.
And the way you look at it is an art. It's a technique. Because this guy's trying to beat me and I'm trying to outclass him. He's trying to outclass him, but by him even trying to outclass me, there's going to be some punches that are going to land clean and we're going to hurt each other a little bit. But it's all about just outclassing each other. It's like a game of chess where you're physically hitting each other. And so that's all it is, really. You have to make sure you try to get this shot in where you're both defending, making sure you're not going to get hit with a shot, but one might slip in and put you down.
Mm.
And then you have to get up and regroup yourself and think, I'm not gonna let that shot hit me again. I'm going to make sure I defend that shot. So boxing is a game of chess. Some fighters are aggressive, thinking that they'll put the pressure on and keep on punching and somehow they'll get a shot in. Some guys like Floyd Mayweather, who are defensive, they'll wait for this opening, even though it gets boring to watch. Just go bang and pin you and then... So boxing is an art, really. It's not just... I've seen guys in the gym who have come in and said... who have been tough guys outside and said, we want to box, we want to fight you, come on, let's have a fight. And one of the weakest guys in the gym has beat them up.
Mm.
So really, you need skill in boxing. It's not about just having the bigger muscles or punching hard.
Let's talk about the mentality side of it a little bit more, because we've mentioned prayer already as sort of contributing a little bit perhaps to that fearless streak. But... were there any events in your early life that maybe changed your attitude towards danger or changed your attitude towards violence?
Towards fight, had changed my attitude. Not really. I mean,
maybe made you less afraid.
I mean, yeah. You know, I used to always play football with the older kids and the older family members, and sometimes you get a little bit of a beating off them. You know what I mean? Or they'll try to kind of bully you a little bit, but it wasn't really that physical, but it was just telling me do this, do that, and they tried to show me that I'm just a kid. But then obviously that made me even work harder to get to where I want to get to in life and not to be that young kid that's going to get bullied. And so sometimes a little bit of bullying does definitely make you stronger, I think, because it made me work harder in the gym and never wanted to be bullied again. So I made sure that, I'm not ever going to bully anyone because it's not in me, because I've had someone bully me. But secondly is that you have to be strong enough to keep these bullies away.
Mm. It's quite interesting to say, you know, something that a lot of people would describe as a very negative experience, but actually you're saying that it was almost a positive for you in a way. You know,
to a positive, because I end up working harder because I don't want to be bullied again.
Mm.
So it's life. In life, you can either give up or you work hard. And obviously I worked hard. And with boxing as well, so my life's just been about working hard, really. Look, I might not have been the most talented fighter. I might not have been the best fighter in the gym, but I just worked very, very hard that I ended up, you know, achieving a lot more than other people out there.
Do you think that, you put it down
really
to
that,
work rate rather than perhaps say skill or, you know, the chess match that you were
100%.
Talking about?
Look, skill came with it. Because I knew when you're working hard, but there was a lot of fighters out there who had more skill than me, who had probably more power than me. But by me working hard day in, day out, made me even better and better and better. And before I knew it, I surpassed these other fighters and become the better fighter.
Let's talk a little bit more about your British-Pakistani identity.
Yeah.
I've got another quote here from the book. You say, like most Asian kids growing up in the late 90s, I was probably born to be a doctor or a teacher, a boxer. No Asian lad did that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Were you aware that you were often the only person of Asian heritage in these boxing spaces?
Yeah, I was the only one. Yeah. So we'd walk into a boxing gym and I was the only Asian person to be in there. And then, but I was never scared in any way. They welcomed me well. Every gym was very respectful I walked into. And even when I boxed, I used to box. And at them days, they had a lot of travelers boxing as well. So a lot of these young traveler kids as well, and really confident these young kids are. I was always a quiet one. I was always quiet and just waited my turn to go in the fight and fight. But it's been a fun journey, and I've enjoyed every bit of it, really, because even though boxing, it's changed my life. That's one thing I can say about boxing, that it's changed my life, and it's made me a better person, I believe, because with all that discipline it's given me, made me that stronger person. It's something that I thank and thank my family for putting me into, because no one ever thought Amir Khan would be in this position, or I would be ever become a world champion. I would ever succeed in this. For me, it was just about discipline, but I took it to that different level. So maybe this is a little. This when you read this book, maybe it'll give confidence to your other young kids to get into their sport and work hard.
I think that'd be a good thing to come out of it, certainly, wouldn't it? Where did you see Asian representation when you were growing up? And actually, probably most importantly, was it a positive representation?
Yeah, it was. Being Asian, being a Muslim. Obviously I saw some, and it's in the book as well, where you saw, obviously, when 9/11 happened, and then, was it 7/7?
7/7, yeah.
Yeah, 7/7.
You fought shortly afterwards as well.
Yeah, and I fought shortly after both times.
Yeah.
So every time something like this happened, I wanted to go out there to the British public and tell them that, even though I'm a Muslim, I'm totally against terrorism. And in our religion, this does not teach you to... Our religion does not teach you to hurt innocent people. And that's what it was. Obviously, when the bombs went off, it was innocent people who got killed. So I'm totally against that, and I stand up to it. And till this day as well, I hate stuff like that happening. You know, innocent people are getting killed for no reason. And... So yeah, I'll stand up no matter who they are, what colour, what race they are, even if they are one of our own.
Did you feel a sense of responsibility to do that? Did you feel like you had to do that? There was an expectation that you had to do that?
Yeah, the responsibility for me to do that was there because I've got so much love from the public in the UK. I mean, everywhere you go, people want pictures, autographs and stuff, and you're like a household name, and they show me on their television and... They support me. I've got one of the biggest fight contracts on TV and everything else. So I thought, why? I have to stand up because Britain's been good with me. I represent Britain in the Olympics, and I had to stand up. I needed to stand up so other people realize that, you know, those that, who are also Muslim, that there's a Muslim like myself who's against this as well.
I think it was the David Bailey fight, which was nine days after. The 7/7
comments. Okay, yes, it was. Yeah, and for just because of that fight and because of that, what happened in
7/7.
Sorry. Just because of what happened in 7/7, I remember that I walked into that ring with a Union Jack flag with the bow on it as a remembrance of the people that died. And I did that because, A, they said that the guys who did the bomb were Muslims. And I want to show the world that not all Muslims are the same. Now, look, there's me who's representing Great Britain, who's a proud British, Great British, England fighter. So I wanted to just knock that on the head and give people, because there's maybe, look, in any religion and any colour, there's always good and bad. So I wanted to make sure that I put that message out.
There's always extremists, aren't there?
100%. In every religion. So I just wanted to make it clear and make sure that the message was put out there that there's always good and bad. And obviously you've got one who is doing good and want people to follow my footsteps.
Do you think it was would have been slightly different? I don't know, to think of an example, but, you know, that you had to not perform, but emphasize your Britishness in perhaps a way that, I don't know, a British Irish fighter might not have had to do, or a British Polish fighter might not have had to do.
Yeah, I had to do a little bit more. I had to do a little bit more because obviously with everything against us and all odds against us because of the color I was, I had to work a little bit harder to make a name. I had to push a little bit harder to make a name. But now if you look, and I was the only Asian that day, that at that time, that was in the gym. There was also racism, everything was involved. But guess what? We just let it by. I remember fighting in amateur fights and championships, and there were people spitting at you outside the ring or throwing things at you because you're a Pakistani, calling you a Paki and stuff. So look, but I never let that get to me. It made me work even harder. And I went on and achieved everything I wanted to achieve. And look, now you walk into a gym now, it's full of Asian kids. A lot of Asian kids are into boxing now. Mm. Look on television, on Sky now, there's so many Asian kids fighting on there, on The Zone, on everywhere, on every TV channel. There's a lot of Asian boxers now. So really we've helped, and I helped to get a lot of Asians into boxing, because our first parents would see boxing as it's a small sport, it's a low class sport. And now our kid would rather be a doctor or a politician. But no, I took it to a level where parents and people started seeing that you can make a life from this sport.
I think you said later in your career that win and you're British, lose and you're Pakistani. And just, you're talking about racism, right? There was when the BNP made gains in Bolton, the then leader of the party, Nick Griffin, he said you should be encouraged to leave Britain. I mean, it's one thing, isn't it, to have people, the like street level instance of racism you're experiencing, but when people are being racist about you on like a huge, you know, sort of public platform.
On a public platform, and I think it was quite sad to see that publicly. And I looked at it and I thought to myself, this person who's saying that to our race, I think I've done more things than him. I've shown that I'm more British than him by winning a medal for the country and representing the country. Not once, but numerous times, and all my fights and winning world titles for this country. So really that kind of stuff, I've never let it get to me, and I've only kind of rose above it.
You never let it get to you, but did it have...
Effect, yeah,
an emotional side to it.
Yeah. It does affect you because you think, well, we live in a country like England where, you know, we've done so much over here. We call it our home. And we respect it as our home. And but there's people out there who want us out and want us away. And so I spoke about that in the book as well, how I was against all that and how it upsets you.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, you've just represented, you won world titles for the country. And then there's, like I said, it's always a handful of people who make everyone else look bad.
I was thinking then as well, you just made me realise you're sort of almost between a rock and a hard place, right? Because you've got, on the one hand, you've got that racism coming from sort of, you know, white British people. And then after you condemn the 7/7 bombings, right, you've got Al-Qaeda threatening you. And it's like you're sort of, you've got everyone's like coming after
you. Everyone coming after me, and I'm just doing what I love doing. I mean, I get a question asked to me and I want to speak the truth. Mm. I only like to speak the truth. And sometimes, like, even in this book, you'll see a lot of the way it's written. It's probably, I'm probably too honest for my own good. And
do you reckon?
Yeah. And also, like, when people ask me questions, I'll speak what I think is right.
Yeah.
And I'm not scared.
Well, because a lot of sports personalities are like very heavily media trained.
Yeah, I'm not PR trained, so like, I'm bad that way. I'm not really PR.
Apologies.
Yeah. No, but you know.
Sometimes you talk to a sports person, it's not interesting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you don't get a sense of who they are. You don't get a sense of the journey they've been on.
And at the same time, look, we all have to make mistakes. I mean, you can't be just perfect.
Yeah.
Well, no one is, but don't come across being like media trained and being that type of person that I think when you're real and you are who you are, people need to love you for who you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And what you've done for the country, like winning world titles and stuff like that. If you're a fake and saying I'm this, I'm that, and I forget that, man. I forget being media trained, man. I'm just real. You like me, you don't like me. It doesn't affect me, but
I think people could see through it as well.
Yeah, people could see right through it, imagine, yeah. Because there's times when I did a couple of TV shows, so like I'm a Celebrity, for example. And then you think a certain individual is this way, and he's so nice and he comes across, but then when you're living somewhere, you end up showing your true colors the way you are, really, as a, like a, you know, the way you really are. And I started seeing on television, on the show, a lot of people start showing their true colors, and you end up thinking they're not really the person they said they are, you know what I mean, or the way they act.
Were you name names? Who are you talking about?
I can't name names. Yeah. Not going to bother. I'll have to. But you know what I mean? I mean, you probably see it yourself as well. You probably see it yourself that when you are, when you meet someone, when the cameras are off and or they're in their comfort,
it's completely
they might just ignore you.
Yeah, completely different.
And I've, and it's happened to me. Like, I'll give you an example.
When you walked in, you didn't talk to me.
Did that by purpose,
and yeah. Mind games.
Yeah, but you know what happened? I tell you what happened with me. I was, you know the guy who plays Ali G.
Yeah,
Sasha
Baron Cohen. Yeah,
yeah. So I seen him in Vegas a couple of years ago when I was starting off. I think I might have just been like a Commonwealth champion, and I was at a big fight there, and I seen him. I was like, oh, Sasha, like he was right next to me, like, and I touched him. I should put my hand out. He looked at me like. And he walked past me and just ignored me.
I don't like that.
So, I don't like that as well. Same, like,
it doesn't matter though. Even you know, if you were just a random person,
even if my hand was out high and just walked past, but like,
there's nothing worse than that when you're out there. Then
he thought he's better than me. You know, what I mean? That's the way I looked at it. And from that day, that's when I then decided I would never ever ignore someone. It's not nice to ignore them. And I go out my own way sometimes. And sometimes I'm dog tired. I'm just like, oh, yeah, no problem. Mm-hmm. Put a smile on, just to. Even my wife says to me sometimes, she goes, what's wrong with you? Like,
you're out for dinner.
You speak to these people like, what is wrong with you? You're too accessible.
Yeah, too nice.
I'm too nice. But I'm like, look, it's what made me, innit? It is.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Let's talk about the boxing a little bit then. Yeah. So at 17, you win an Olympic silver medal in Athens. You're hailed as a hero on your return back home.
Yeah, it was crazy, yeah.
You said, and this is a quote, it was the first time I felt famous. What does all that positive attention do to you, yourself, and, you know, possibly also your ego as well?
Yeah, I mean, it makes you more gives you loads of motivation, you know what I mean? To like, you're doing something right and you can make it to the top. I mean, yeah, just having the press, media, people supporting you, coming out for you just inspires you to go out there and do more.
And what influence did that Olympic medal have in your gym? Were you seeing more lads coming in, starting to fight? How did it affect your relationship with your trainer?
It got even better, even stronger, you know what I mean? And I think to see more boxers come into the gym, especially British Pakistanis, people started believing in themselves, and then parents started liking boxing, because before boxing was, poor man's sport. But people then started taking boxing as a serious sport.
So we then mentioned David Bailey, you get the win there. Then you become Commonwealth lightweight champion after beating Willie Limond at the O2.
Wow, you've done your research. Oh, paper.
It's written down in front of me, my man. Don't worry about it.
I didn't see a paper. I thought, wow. I go, how do you know that? Because
I think I was quite young at the time.
How old were you then?
I'm 30.
Oh, so you was a baby then.
Yeah. So it's not my memory, yeah.
It's about 10.
I watched it. I watched it on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, on YouTube.
Yeah, to catch up research, man.
Go on.
Around this time, you write that you start to feel like, and this is a quote, the media in general might look to land a blow to your reputation. Why was that? Why did you feel that way?
Back then,
yeah.
Against Willie Limond.
Yeah.
Because I got put down in that fight, and I could see that, you know, because I was winning everything so comfortably. You know, as soon as you have one little hiccup, they want to kind of put you down, and they want to then say, he's been hurting. They do try to trash you a little bit. I don't know if it's because it helps them sell the papers, because it is a story, isn't it, where this guy who's come from the Olympics is the best thing since sliced bread, but guess what, he's just been put down in a fight and could have lost it. But even though, I mean, not once, not in a million years I wouldn't have lost that fight. But anyway, so I think they'll always try to have a go at you at things. But
does it bother you?
No, it doesn't really bother me. No, not at all. I just think they're wasting ink for no reason. I mean, and it's true, wasting ink for no reason. But I just leave it. Don't talk about it. I'm just chilled.
So, let's talk about your loss against Bradis Prescott then. You described it as a wrecking ball through your up until then undefeated pro career.
Yeah.
You said after the loss you had friends disappearing overnight.
Yeah.
Is the world of pro boxing fickle like that? Is that, or do you think that's something unique to you? I mean, tell me a little bit more about
that. It was a bit new to me at that time when that happened, because as soon as I lost a fight, the friends that were around you who said that you were going to be a world champion, we're going to be behind you, we are your best friends, we're around you, they all walked out on me. Like maybe 50% all walked out, and then the people that normally call you don't call you no more. And obviously I was only young then, and so it got me quite sensitive. I was quite sensitive, and it got me quite emotional that happened. But then obviously it made me stronger, made me the person I am, because obviously I thought, you know what, you're on your own in this world, and if you get beat, it's only you to blame. And the people around you, they're going to get on with their normal 9-to-5 jobs or get on with their life. And yeah.
Do you think one fight can change the trajectory of a boxing career?
100%.
Yeah?
It can, yeah.
Why do you think it didn't then?
Because they still thought maybe I'm young and I can come back from a loss like this. But yeah. But it did. A lot of people's ways changed, and the sport kind of changed a little bit, thinking that I'm not going to become a champion. I'm not going to achieve the goals I said I was going to achieve. They thought maybe I was just I just want to hit a miss. I mean, it was like, he tried and he didn't succeed. So most people would give up after that, because just that mentally, all that negative media and the stuff that you see on social media puts you so low in the ground that you think, you just give up. A lot of people would give up, but mentally I was very strong that way, because I had tasted defeat back in the amateurs when I was young. And for me, I loved the sport of boxing and I didn't care. Even if I lost 3 fights in a row, I was happy with that. Because I was happy with it. And it was giving me a lot of happiness being a fighter.
It's got to affect your mental health, right? Because you have this idea, call it a plan, call it of like what you think is going to happen, what you expect to happen, what you want to happen. And then, you know, something like that, you lose a fight and all of a sudden, maybe that's not going to happen anymore.
Crazy, man. Yeah, that normally doesn't happen. It's like, but you can see it with football, for example. When a football match is happening and a team loses that should have won, man, they get off, it goes crazy. And I feel sorry for these football players because I've seen some videos on YouTube where how they get dissed by their fans, and then the week after that they're fans of theirs again. So it's just but the way I look at it different now. I look at it like it happens and you just can't let it get to you. You just have to move on and get on with it.
You moved to America to train with Freddie Roach.
Correct.
And you've described that as one of the biggest risks you've ever taken.
Massive risk.
Do you think you're drawn to risk? Do you
Yeah, 100%. I love taking risks, because that's what makes me different. Me going to America, it was a time where I was making big money in the UK, and then I took a paycheck. I cut it to half, literally. I went to America because I went to fight there. So I made less money, but I went to take that risk because I know that if I make it in America, I'll succeed even further. And I know I've seen the fighters who have gone to America, made a name in America, and it makes you a global star. And that's what I wanted to do. See, everyone in Europe kind of knew who I was, like in England especially, but no one in America, they just might have heard the name. So I thought that if I go to America, I want to get the mega fights. I mean, forget about these fights and being champion of UK or Europe. I want to be a world champion. So that's what I did. Soon as I become that world champion, I started having my world title fights in America, because the hype I had the biggest TV channels behind me, HBO, Showtime. I was one of the top fighters with a contract with HBO. Had a contract with Showtime. I mean, ESPN, I fought on the biggest channels in the UK, which then fights started getting broadcasted all around the world. So more eyes are watching the fight. And they're thinking, see, I was a little bit different in that sense, where I was a bit unique because I'm a Muslim, I'm a Pakistani, and I'm a young lad, so they probably thought, who's this young Asian, British Pakistani kid. So decided following my footsteps. I thought, let's check up on him, let's see who he is. Because one thing about the Asian community is that we end up, we watch an Asian kid doing so, we think, wow, look how, let's start following him because he's representing us as well. You know, as British Pakistanis, there's no one doing it like him. So let's start following him. And then through that, then the other American Pakistanis, the European Pakistanis started following me and it became crazy, yeah. I started to build a big fan base. So.
I guess, yeah, just from like a completely, maybe not cynical, but objective point of view, you know, you're from a different background. So immediately you've, in terms of marketability, you've got access to markets that perhaps other fighters didn't necessarily have.
100%, exactly. And then obviously I was, I spoke well after fights. I was a confident kid. I had that Olympic background. Yeah, and look, I think, I'm not going to say I had the looks. I wouldn't
either, mate.
But you know what the thing was? It was just, I said, God was watching over me, man. Yeah. That's all I can say. God was watching over me and all blessings and from people and people who prayed for me, my mother and everyone. Look, that's where it comes from. I'm a big believer of that. You know, if you're a good person by heart and you, God will open a lot of doors for you.
Could you talk a little bit about, as an athlete, as, you know, a celebrity, your treatment in Britain, your treatment in America, was it different the way Americans viewed you or the American media treated and viewed you to what it was like, yeah, in Britain?
Very different. Because then, look, you'll get the boxing fans in America love you and support you. Boxing fans in England like you and then diss you as well at the same time. I mean, like, they find a way of like really putting you down as well. But the Americans just get on with it, really. They just love a little bit of a scrap, you know what I mean? a little bit of a scrap. But I think in England, it's slowly changing now.
Oh, yeah.
Because more of the, like, boxing is getting even bigger now. And we just appreciate a great night. And it's becoming more of an event now. So if you look at it, when I was fighting in the young years, in my early fights, there was hardly any women, families coming to boxing fights. Now it's full of families, kids are coming there, wives, ladies, girlfriends, they're all going to watch boxing now. And normally people would say it's a bad sport. They say, no, it's not. Got women there and everything now. And I think the sport is just getting bigger and bigger now.
I was asking you about that risk you took, right? Yeah. And there's the risk of moving to America, there's the risk of just getting in the boxing ring, right? But I wonder, outside of the sport and in your personal life, whether you're also drawn to risk in the same way when you're talking about fighting.
Yeah, I think I am. You know, I take risks in my life, and I think sometimes it could be a bad thing to do as well. But look, it's just who I am as a person. You know, I'm a type of guy who believes in myself, and if it's business, if it's boxing, if it's even outside life, I take risks, and it kind of gives me that buzz.
As close as you can get to walking out, I guess.
Yeah, because obviously walking out the ring and stuff like that, that buzz will never come back again until I get back in the ring again. But
until
if I get back in the ring again.
Yeah.
If I get back in the ring again.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, look, there's always talks about like exhibition fights happening and
stuff. You're thinking about it.
I do miss it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not going to lie. Like, Chris Eubank Jr. fight and Liam Smith fight. I was at the MEN Arena and I looked out and it was crazy. It was full house. And the promoter came over to me and said to me, do you know when you fought here last against Kell Brook, it was probably times two busier. I said, what? And we never get to see that because we're so focused on the fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said it was a full house that I think we sold maybe 5,000 more tickets. We shouldn't have. But I do miss that hype, that buzz. You're walking out and you've got thousands of people there supporting you,
yeah,
and getting back in that mix again. But the way I'm going to see if I do have it in me still is I'll probably have a hard spar with someone, see how I feel with small gloves on. And if I do well, I'll maybe one day consider another fight. If I don't, then call it a day.
Because there's a lot of lads either going for, you know, MMA fighters. We've got Fury and Ngannou happening.
I would have never fight an MMA fight, though.
No?
Yeah, MMA fight. Me going fight in an MMA fight.
Because look, Fury's saying that, isn't he? They'll box that, and then they'll do an MMA fight afterwards.
Yes, Fury is an animal, though, isn't he?
He is, mate.
I mean, he's a strong guy, and he's got this big fight against Agano. And look, okay, fine. I think he'll outbox him. But to be honest with you, having Mike Tyson on your side, Ngannou is Mike.
He can punch.
Yeah, he can punch hard as well. But look, I'm not seeing much of his MMA skills. Is he got that knockout power, like when he hits you once, boom, you're gone?
My God.
Really?
Oh, mate, yeah. Well, like one punch knockout. He's a scary guy in the UFC. Yeah, really, really scary bloke.
And we don't give any respect, well, as much respect to MMA fighters. But think about it this way now. MMA fighters, fine. If you said they can't punch and they're not really that good, Floyd Mayweather was hit 100 times clean by McGregor.
No.
Imagine Ngannou hitting Tyson Fury 100 times clean.
I don't even want to think about Ngannou hitting anyone 100 times clean.
Yeah, so you see how it can happen. So
absolutely,
look,
yeah.
Tyson
punches chance.
Punches chance. And at the same time, I think that Tyson is just special.
He is, yeah.
Like he just finds a way. You can put him down once, twice, but he'll find a way. And he'll come back and he'll destroy you.
That's the thing, isn't it? Wilder did it. Well, you know,
Wilder showed it when he put him down.
And he got
the
back
first
up.
Knockdown, when he put him down, I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I thought he's out. So, you know, when they count in one, two, and normally you probably stop counting and say, you know, it's done. But like Undertaker, he lifted his head up, boom. And I was shocked. Because if I was the referee, respect to the referee in that fight, because the referee, if I was any other referee, might have stopped that fight while he's down and out. But he just woke up after 7-8, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was an 8-count, wasn't it? Did you see all the Americans as well timing it, saying that it was longer, that he'd had more than 10
seconds?
You're
always going to get that. Listen, when a fighter from England goes to America, they're always going to say that, you know, it was a long count. But,
yeah, all that.
And that referee is a well-renowned referee, so I don't think that's true.
To talk about you a little bit more, and you potentially returning, seeing as we're here now talking about it, would you fancy...
I don't know about returning. I'm saying,
no, like, you're thinking about
maybe
it.
Maybe one day.
Yeah, you're thinking about it.
Maybe feet. Like, I look like I get itchy hands and I might just
want to. Yeah, yeah. Get in there. And I don't know. There's a lot of influencers, a lot of YouTubers out there looking for fights who maybe might be a little bit of easy money for you to get in the ring with them.
Yeah, I mean,
What are you talking about? KSI, Logan Paul, Jake Paul? You fancy that? Would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll take them out. I mean, that's just, that's easy work.
Yeah?
Come on, that's
light
easy work. That's light work. Whatever, guys. Yeah, that's like a... I think that's like classed as a mismatch.
Yeah.
Don't want to end up hitting them. Look, let's see.
Very good.
Yeah.
To talk a little bit more about boxing, we had actually another UFC guy, Tom Aspinall, in the chair talking about boxing. And he trained with the Furies a bit. He had a pro boxing fight. And he was pretty critical about the model of boxing and the sort of how cards are arranged, that you can almost, before the event, you can go down the card and kind of say, that's who's winning that one. That's who's winning that one.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he said he wasn't really that keen on boxing as a result. And he also, from a safety point of view, was also a little bit worried about people sort of getting mismatched, taking on fights where they know they're going to lose and potentially getting hurt.
Okay.
I don't know what you think of that criticism, whether there's any validity to it or...
I mean, there's some... Yeah, look, if you can go through a fight card and make your mind up on who's going to win and who's going to lose, because really most fights should be 50-50 or 60-40, they're still close fights.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, and that's what MMA is like. So 100%, look, when it comes down to matchmaking, fights happening in boxing compared to fights happening in MMA, I think MMA is surpassing boxing.
Mm.
Because people want to see fights that they're showing. People really want to see these fights that MMA are showing. But boxing fights are like, oh, okay, whatever, you know what I mean?
People see competition.
People like seeing good competition, and there's a lot of big fights that we want to see in boxing, which never really get made. But in MMA, like, it's a monopoly because Dana White has got all the fighters on the UFC. Like, the man of the UFC can pick and choose who he fights who. Whereas with boxing, you've got Bob Arum, you've got Oscar De La Hoya, you've got Frank Warren, you've got Eddie Hearn, you've got Ben Shalom now.
Mm.
So really, it's each... And then There's different TV stations. You've got Sky with one, you got DAZN with another, then you've got BT Sport with another. So it's contracts. These fighters have contracts that they can't fight a guy who's with the other stable. You know what I mean? Now having Joshua fight against Fury, it'd be very hard to make because I'm sure Joshua has a deal with DAZN, a contract with them. Tyson has a contract with BT Sport. They will not let that fight happen. Well, how they can't meet? How will they meet middle ground and say we'll go 50-50 on pay-per-view? No, they won't. So it's very hard to make fights nowadays because, like, that's the thing about UFC is there's only one big promoter and one big company.
Simplifies it,
whereas in boxing there's so many.
Let's talk a little bit more about your move to America. While living in LA, you write about being around sort of A-list celebrities and how it was potentially affecting your boxing. You say, you said you want to emphasize that you're special like they are. So how was being around celebrities negatively affecting you? Could you talk about that a bit more?
Yeah, it was. It did affect you a little bit because imagine you're in a training camp. You get someone like Mark Wahlberg walk in the gym, what you trained. Your focus just disappears. You think, wow. Then you get someone like Jason Statham or... And then these guys, and even Mickey Rourke, for example, they'll walk in, they'll want to see you train, and a couple of basketball players, don't know their names, but I know they're basketball players, they're really tall. they'll walk in the gym and they'll watch you train and stuff, and then they'll invite you out, and you cannot turn them down. You'll be like, oh yeah, 100% I'll be there. But you might have a run at night time. But you'll say, it's only one run. But then every other day, there used to be famous people coming now. Every other day, they want to meet you and take you out and hang out with you. Now, you're doing it with that respect because they are someone, but you're then neglecting your training. And if a fight goes wrong, then, you know, you're not going to be that same person that they want to come and see again.
Was there a little bit of maybe your own ego in there as well, wanting to hang out with those people yourself, wanting to be seen with those people?
100%. You're young. You want to be seen with these people. And, who doesn't? I mean, it's a new thing now, you know what I mean? It's when Instagram was blowing up. It's like when Facebook and Twitter was blowing up and you want likes, don't you? You want people to, you want a post to show your million like people, followers, million followers that, look who I'm hanging out with, you know what I'm saying? Look, I think everything now is social media driven. And it's on who's on the ground, isn't it?
That's probably why you're talking to us now, let's be honest with you.
Yeah, well, come on.
Let's talk about your last ever fight.
Part is we want to get it because we know you guys have such a big following.
Absolutely.
Was it 15 million?
Yeah, just over. So, yeah, you know.
We got our book here. And to put this on your platform is...
15 million sales, yeah.
Is exactly so.
That'd be all right, wouldn't it?
That'd be really good. What, you want to buy them?
I'll sort it out.
You should just
I'll tell
buy
it.
Them.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, guys. But listen, here, I mean, look, it's all promotion. And
absolutely.
We like you guys. That's why we came here as well.
Appreciate it, man.
So we had the chance to go elsewhere, but I was like, nah,
of course, of course.
It's not the followers, is it?
Let's talk about your last, so sort of coming towards the end of sort of talking about boxing, your last ever fight, Kell Brook. Well, last ever fight so far.
Yeah.
You failed a drugs test. You had an adverse finding.
Yeah.
And we've seen some high-profile tests as well coming out with adverse findings in the last 12 months. Conor Benn, Dillian White, Robert Hellenius, Alicia Baumgardner. I mean,
massive difference. Big difference in this. Now, let me explain to you guys, yeah? So what I got caught with a female drug. Now, I'm going to give you an example. Say there's an Olympic-sized swimming pool. The amount that was in my blood and they found in my system week of the fight, it was equivalent to 1 grain of salt in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, right? Fine, look, you kind of also stated it was never gonna enhance, make me any stronger, any quicker. And they do admit it was unintentional. But forget all that. Put that to a side. Look, I don't know how it got in the system. It could have been cross-contamination. Maybe it's a good lesson for young fighters that you can't be sharing drinks with people. You have to be very careful. But yeah, look, it was in my system. I put my hand up. But the other guy fighters who have been caught taking had a lot more. That was helping them, making them stronger, making them bigger, making them faster, whatever it is. With me, you could see my performance as well in that fight. You know what I mean? But yeah, if you could have come out with that statement, it was only, like I say, unintentional. I don't know how it got in the system.
Was that one test as well right? There were
it was
before.
One out of, like, I think we must have done 8-9 tests, and it was like one of 8, 9, 10 I've never ever, and you know, I've never been, ever been found positive. It's the first ever time ever. And for this fight, it's not Kell Brook, it's not the boxing promotion who wanted this testing. I'm the one who asked for it. I'm the one who said, guys, I want testing for this fight. And if I was in any way thinking that I was going to cheat or I was going to do anything wrong, I don't think I would have wanted
to be tested.
Testing or be tested or wanted in the contract. I'm the one who put in the contract.
Let's have, so there's obviously that point of difference which you've made clear there between yourself and those other examples I listed. To talk about the other examples though for a second, I mean, what do you think it says about the state of boxing at the moment that there are, you know, positive test results like that coming
back?
Yeah,
there is. And I, like I said, I'm totally against it. I'm going to speak up on it. Look, fighters should not be taking anything. Yeah, and that's period, because look, you're putting someone's life on the line. You are going into a boxing ring to punch someone in the head and to hurt someone. Now, if you're taking drugs, you're gonna be far ahead, stronger than your opponent, and you can seriously hurt them. I mean, people can die in that ring, or you can get hurt yourself as well. I mean, you might be that strong that you might be able to take so much punishment that you might end up hurting yourself. And there's fighters that have been killed in the ring. So yeah, I am totally against it, man.
Slightly separate to boxing, I think you almost got into a little bit of a fist fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov once upon a time with with Hasbullah and Abdul Rozek.
Tell me that story. So Khabib, I have nothing to do with it. Okay. Yeah, don't even put me. I got tried some drama with him, because that's the one person you don't really want to mess with. Imagine that he comes over and says, "What did you say to Channel Joe? Did you say you had some beef with me?" Imagine he came and said that to me. Not me, mate. You know what? We was at the MMA event. They got me ringside tickets and stuff. We sat there, and I see Khabib. So obviously we took a picture together. We had a good chat, because he has a picture with me. He went to a fight of mine when I fought Devin Alexander back in 2014. He was there, or 2016. He took a picture with the boxing ring and my picture on it. Like a fan picture, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, look how big he is there. I mean, he's one of the biggest names in MMA. He's a legend, man. When he posts that picture, I had to repost it, you know what I mean? I thought, wow, Khabib took a picture next to mine, and he was at my fight at that time. I wish I knew him then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I would invite him in the ring. But look, a legend of a fighter. And then what happened was Hasbullah and Rozek, I know Rozek really well. They started having a bit of they did a head-to-head first, but then a little bit of pushing happened, because Hasbullah's a bit of a handful.
Yeah.
So I remember him trying to get Abdul Rozek into a headlock. and now we're talking about two small men fighting each other, and I'm stood there and I'm thinking, I better jump. So I jumped in, I'm like, let's stop them. So that's the only time that happened. And
what was Khabib's involvement though? What happened
there? Khabib's involvement there, I'm quite lucky and quite glad as well. He was nowhere near that area, because obviously he would have backed his guy, and then I would have, maybe me and Khabib might have to have a little bit of, imagine that. But look, we know we are professional fighters, and I bet even Khabib would never want to fight outside the cage. I would never want to fight outside the boxing ring. We'll just walk away. We're gentlemen. We are ambassadors of our sports. And but it was a bit of fun. I seen it everywhere on social media the next day, and I'm and all my videos everywhere. It was like everyone's reposting it and stuff like that. And I thought, wow, just a little video. And for me, it was a bit of fun, but people really thought that a fight was going to happen.
People love Hasbullah.
Hasbullah's a beast, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about your personal life, your family life.
Yep.
2013, you got married to your wife, Fayal, and you celebrated with two weddings, not just one.
Two weddings, yeah.
And Bolton.
Yep.
You write that this inspired you to create a wedding venue in Bolton, but, and this is a quote, that would turn out to be the biggest of never-ending headaches. I think you mentioned earlier, I can't remember, £12.5 million. So run me through that. What was the original idea? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, the original idea was it was going to cost around about £4 million. Can't even £5 million is fine, but we're up to £12 million and still not ready. But look, it is what it is. It upset me a lot, because I thought that's a lot of money to throw into something. It's a money pit where you're throwing money into it and there's no return. And you know, this is blood money as well. Like, I've been taking punches all my life for this. I've got hurt for it. And it really, really upset me. And so managed to then get it all sorted out. Couldn't sell it because if I sell it, I'll sell it for half the price.
Mm.
So I'm going to lose half. I'll still forget selling it. I'll just run it as a business. So now I've got it up and running. I rented it out to a company and it's worked out well. But yeah, it was a very tough time. And it put me in a really dark place as well, you know, because it, with all that money being spent and then having the hand operation, at that time, it was the same time I thought, am I ever going to fight again? Look how much money's gone down the drain. So yeah, it was a tough time, but look, I'm glad that, look, when you believe in God and you are a good person, God always puts the path out there for you and things have gone good down.
Have you always, well, talk about your sort of, the business side of things, if you like. I think this is a quote.
Yeah.
The business of Amir Khan, you know, when you were fighting, should you have been perhaps a little bit more hands-on with that sort of, that side of things? Did you have the time for it? Or, you know, because I think your family were quite involved in
it. Yeah, my family were involved in it. But the only thing is that, you know what, when you're in training camp, you've got a big fight going on, but you're so focused on the fight. Yeah. It's so hard to look, oh yeah, get a different accountant and get a... but you know what, to be honest with you, my accountant turned out dirty as well. That's the honest truth. And so, you know, when stuff like that happens, it's very hard then to trust people. You can't put the blame on anyone because I know people saying, you can't put the blame on me because I had a fight coming up.
Mm.
I had to focus on a fight. I mean, I could get killed in that ring. I have to be in tip-top shape and I have to focus on one thing, which is to win that fight or come out of that fight in good health. So I can't really control too much. But then, you know, slowly in time, I got some control back. And now... and I was so young as well and a lot of money was coming in them days. But look, I'm glad that now I've got it up to a T, I've got it all sorted. And even if I ever did go in the boxing ring again, I know that the whole structure and system is set.
I mentioned it in the intro, but there's this moment, right, where you go and you go to look at your bank account. It's not that you've got no money, but you've certainly got less than you're expecting to find in there. Could you talk us through that moment a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that happened same time as when I had my hand operation. And I thought, am I going to fight again? And then I thought I'll be fine. And then later on, I went and had to do another hand operation because they didn't manage to fix it. So overall, we did 3 hand operations. I checked my bank account. Did I really have the money, the kind of money that I thought I had? Can I survive with that kind of money for the rest of my life? No, I can't. What do I know? I mean, like, we're so used to making them big paychecks. And, I mean, that was my motivation then. And obviously then I've got 2 children, I got 2 little girls, and I thought I need to definitely get back in that ring again and then make sure I get the biggest fights and secure my future.
Mm.
And that's what I did. And it worked for me. Look, because there's a lot of fighters who then later on come back and they don't really get that opportunity. But look, like I said, God's been watching over me and I got them big fights again and I made back double what I probably lost. And so, yeah, and I could have given up there. So this is a little bit what we talk about in the book, is that there was times where I wanted to give up, but I never did because I'm not only doing it for myself, I'm doing it for my family, my generation, my people.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I'm not asking you to revisit or relitigate sort of the arguments that you have and you talk about in the book. But for me, it's interesting, you know, whether it's this, the money side of things here and the sort of the tension, mistaken tension perhaps between your family and your wife, or, you know, other previous examples with like AJ and, you know, tweeting about it and that kind of thing. But I'm interested in the sort of these things happening publicly, you know.
Yeah.
And that dynamic, because, you know, it's one thing having the argument, it's another thing for it happening publicly, right?
See, them days we're big on social media and just to get to someone and to destroy them, because I had so much anger in me that I'd end up tweeting something and it'll go boom, it'll go everywhere because it's a way of getting it everywhere, you know what I mean? And I realized that it was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made, because really with very little evidence, with also very little information, I assumed I put out there, and I had lawyers on my case. I was gonna get sued because these allegations I made were all false, and it could have put me into a lot of trouble and problems. But luckily, like I said, I sorted my life out. I sorted myself out. I said my apologies and I moved forward and moved on with life and that was one of the toughest times of my life because I didn't know where I was and what I was doing in life and had no one to talk to, no one who could help me, no one who could direct me in the right way. And one of the ways I got over it was when I went to the jungle.
Oh, yeah.
And when I went to the jungle, I had time to think, time, because instead of people telling you things every other day, different voices, I went to the jungle and it changed my life. It made me realize that, what do I really want in life? And I went out and I went and got it. Mm. I mean, I went back, got out of the jungle, sorted all my issues out with my wife, my parents, and then ended up sorting a massive issue out with Eddie Hearn, who me and Eddie have never spoke for years, and I ended up doing a fight contract with him, which was a massive, a shock to the world because they were like, what? I mean, and Eddie, they normally talking rubbish to each other, and now they've bloody done a deal together. So then tables all turned and they all went for the best of here.
Do you feel underappreciated? Because let me say this, not just by boxing fans, but by the British public, because, you know, some people write you off, whether it's the, you know, whether we're talking about boxing and people saying nasty things about you, you know, like you said, you know, you went down in one of those fights, or people saying stuff about he's got a glass chin, or, you know, your personal life, you know, in the tabloids at the moment and the stuff they call you. I think I saw Love Rat on the Daily Mail. But what you did at the Olympics, you know, for British boxing, what you've done for young Asian people in the UK, becoming a world-class, you know, boxer in your weight division, you deserve a lot of credit. Do you think you get it? I do think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, because everyone has their own. And maybe it's been that long ago now that people remember me that I was a fighter and I was a world champion and I was a Olympian and I was I saved boxing. Then, yeah, I mean, but look, it is what it is, isn't it? I mean, you're always going to get people talking rubbish. And it's come to a stage now where I've stopped caring. I'm very strong mentally, man. Whatever they want to say, as long as I'm focused and I'm on the right path and I know what's going on in my life and I'm in control of it, I'm all right. You can say what you want, really. But yeah, you do get a lot of hate and stuff like that. But like I said, it's not going to break me now.
Emmett Khan, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.